thewatermarkdentalcenter.com. We also thank the Watermark Art Center in downtown Bemidji with exhibits, classes, and handcrafted original art made by regional artists found in their shop 505. The center is accessible and open to the public, watermarkartcenter.org. If we take a look at our current temperatures, we've got a bit of a range out there throughout northern Minnesota. It is 37 in Hibbing, 50 in Brainerd, 46 in Park Rapids, 42 in Grand Rapids, 44 in Bemidji, and 47 in Aiken. Weather for today, we can expect increasing clouds, chance of showers by late afternoon, highs 68 to 74, winds from the south 5 to 10, gusting higher. Showers are likely tonight with lows 55 to 60, patchy fog after midnight and into the early morning. Then we do have a slight chance of showers early tomorrow, gradually clearing with highs in the low 70s and overnight temperatures near 55. Looking ahead to Wednesday, mostly sunny and highs near 75. It's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. The Department of Natural Resources is recognizing three Northland conservation officers for their life-saving efforts this year. Park Rapids CO Nick Baum received the life-saving award for his part of a rescue operation on the Fish Hook River. An angler had fallen through the ice this March, and while attempting to rescue him, a responding officer also went through. Baum helped pull the officer and angler out. Reamer CO Corey Sura was also recognized for his role in an ice rescue on the same day in March. An ATV fell through the ice on Big Rice Lake in Cass County while Sura was speaking to an angler on shore about 400 yards away. With the assistance of the angler, he was able to rescue the two riders from the submerged ATV. International Falls CO Kurt Simonson received the award for his role in a search for an elderly diabetic man this July. Simonson checked trails and noticed tracks leading to the missing man's Jeep. The man was found behind the vehicle lying on his side, covered in flies and mud. He was taken to a hospital and released the next day. The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission will host three public hearings on Minnesota Power's proposed Boswell Solar Project on Wednesday and Thursday. The utility has applied for a site and route permit for its 85-megawatt project and the associated 2.5-mile transmission line. The solar project will span parts of Cohasset, the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Reservation, and Deer Lake Township. Attendees will be able to ask questions of state staff and Minnesota Power, comment on the merits of the project, and suggest possible conditions for the permits. The first meeting will be at the Bina Community Center at noon Wednesday. The second will be later that day at 6 at the Cohasset Community Center. An online public meeting will begin at 6 p.m. Thursday. Find the link to that meeting and more on how to comment at kaxe.org. Comments are open through September 25th. Crow Wing County is reminding the public that September is National Preparedness Month. Crow Wing County Public Health is helping guide residents on what to include in a basic emergency kit. Gradually building a kit is more affordable, and it helps prepare for supply shortages in case of a disaster. Ace Hardware stores in Brainerd, Nisswa, and Crosby will have green tags on items recommended for an emergency kit, and checklists are available near the front of each store. The public health team will also have a booth at area libraries this month to share more about emergency kits. They'll be at the Hallett Library Thursday, September 11th from 9 to 11 a.m. You can also catch them at the Brainerd Library on September 16th or the Cross Lake Area Library on September 30th, also from 9 to 11. Imagine seeing your child struggle with school issues, but educators can't see it. This can occur for households seeking special education services as Minnesota districts and parents work through unique cases. Individualized education programs are a key tool K-12 schools use when meeting the learning needs of students with disabilities, such as autism or speech and hearing impairments. Federal law mandates IEPs, but a medical diagnosis doesn't lead to automatic approval, with negative impacts on learning or social skills also required. Administrator Todd Tetzlaff with North Branch Area Public Schools says what's playing out at home might be different than what's happening in the classroom.
The child is very distracted, they're off task, but then at school, you know, they're gathering data and they're looking at, boy, the kids' assignment completion rate is 95%.
Some parents contend at-home concerns warrant formal services out of fear things will quickly spiral in the classroom. Tetzlaff says they don't want to be premature in putting a child under the special education umbrella. He reminds families to request new evaluations if things change, with fewer steps needed if it happens within 12 months. Educators and parents say cases are becoming more complex with multiple conditions, and in rare situations, families making full use of the alternative dispute resolution process. Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits.
It is 7:06. Thanks for listening to KAXE and the Monday Morning Show. I'm Jennifer Barr. Support comes from Edward Jones financial advisor Christina Gallas, helping individuals and business owners reach their financial goals. More information at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC. Coming up at 7:45, it's what we're reading today. Tammy Bobrowski talks with Minnesota writer Tasha Coryell about her new thriller. It is called Matchmaking for Psychopaths. And coming up at 8:10 this morning, it's time for a Bright Spot. We are going to learn about Healthy Aging Month with Sarah Kreumans from the University of Minnesota Extension. They have lots of webinars going on this month and also resources all year round, all about healthy aging. Right now, we continue with Morning Edition from National Public Radio.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadil in Washington, D.C.
And May Martinez in Culver City, California. The man accused of attempting to assassinate Donald Trump last year will represent himself in his jury trial. That starts today. We'll hear more about his defense in just a few minutes. First, though, South Korean officials say they've negotiated for the release of more than 300 people who were detained during an immigration raid last week at an electric vehicle battery facility near Savannah, Georgia. The Korean workers account for a majority of those detained in what the Department of Homeland Security said was its largest ever single-site investigation. From member station WABE in Atlanta, here's Molly Samuel.
The raid happened at a battery factory under construction at a huge industrial manufacturing site. The anchor of that site is a new Hyundai electric and hybrid vehicle plant. Cars started rolling off the line there last year. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp announced plans for that Hyundai factory back in 2022.
It is my great honor to officially announce that Hyundai Motor Group will build their first dedicated electric vehicle manufacturing plant right here in this good soil in Bryan County.
Kemp touted the billions of dollars of investment it would bring, including from suppliers, and the thousands of jobs that would be created.
Welcoming the largest economic development project in our state's history. Congratulations again.
Georgia has pushed to become a center of solar panel, electric vehicle, and battery manufacturing. The state also has close business ties to South Korea. Governor Kemp has visited multiple times, and the state has an economic development office in Seoul. Those efforts have paid off with big announcements like the Hyundai factory, which have brought in other companies and projects like this battery plant that was raided last week. Next door to the car factory, it's a joint venture between Hyundai Motor Group and LG Energy Solution, slated to start production early next year. Last Thursday, 475 workers at the site were detained and taken to an immigration detention center in South Georgia.
This was not an immigration operation where agents went into the premises, rounded up folks, and put them on buses.
At a press conference the next day, Stephen Schrenk with the Department of Homeland Security said some of the detainees were in the U.S. illegally, others had overstayed their visas or were using the wrong visa to work.
This has been a multi-month criminal investigation where we have developed evidence, conducted interviews, gathered documents, and presented that evidence to the court in order to obtain a judicial search warrant.
Schrenk said the workers were employed by contractors, subcontractors, sub-subcontractors. He said investigators were still untangling who was employed where. In a statement last week, Hyundai said, based on what it called its current understanding, none of those detained worked directly for the motor company. A South Korean official said the country was chartering a plane to bring the workers back to Korea and said the country would work to review and improve visa systems for people working in the U.S. For NPR News, I'm Molly Samuel in Atlanta.
For more on this, we're joined by Tammy Overby, an international business consultant. She formerly led the U.S.-Korea Business Council at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. She was also president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Korea. Good morning, Tammy. Thank you for being on the program.
My pleasure.
So why do you think this raid happened at the construction site of a U.S. Hyundai plant, and why now?
I think because it's a major in construction project, probably one of the largest going on. South Korean investors are among the largest in the U.S. right now, and there are lots of people there. And I think why now? We understand this reveals the tension between the Trump administration's desire to bring make things in America, bring these factories back, and the lack of high-skilled workers to actually build these plants.
So what is the message of a raid like this? You point out that South Korean companies are spending here. They recently pledged to spend tens of billions of dollars in the U.S. in shipbuilding, semiconductors, batteries, and it's something the U.S. really advocated for. So with a raid like this, what is the message to the business community in South Korea and other foreign companies? Will they keep investing and building in the U.S.?
That's a great question. And I will tell you that the videos and the photos of Koreans being gathered up and treated like criminals is playing all over Asia. And I'm sure today and in the days going forward, boardrooms will be full of discussions about, is the U.S. a reliable trade partner right now? Is this how we want to treat companies that are spending billions of dollars here and creating high-paying, good 21st century jobs for Americans? One of my Korean friends said, it sounds like you want our money, but you don't want us.
What about, you know, the U.S. attorney in Southern Georgia said the operation was to, quote, prevent employers from gaining an unfair advantage by hiring unauthorized workers, unquote. Do you think that's what's going on here?
Well, I think certainly that's part of that, but I think it's a much broader and deeper issue. The U.S. has labor shortages in construction, and we're just not talking about, you know, building a simple house. These are advanced manufacturing facilities, and the question of whether the U.S. has enough high-skilled talent to build these, I think, is a fair question to ask. And I do believe it's very common for you know, when I worked in Korea in the 90s, I would see Americans coming to Korea to oversee the building of their facilities there. As you train and transfer that management technology and that know-how, it takes time and you've got to bring it in. And as you pointed out, shipbuilding, semiconductors, we don't have a lot of that technology in the U.S. We're trying to get it. And the Koreans were willing to do it and bringing their money to do it. And now I'm being asked, is this how you treat your friends?
What about the issue? I mean, one of the things is this plant comes to Georgia and Georgians were hoping this would bring jobs. And now many people are questioning why these jobs were going to foreign workers and not Americans. What do you say to them?
Well, I think, I'm, you know, just speaking with the information I've seen from the press, no direct knowledge. But I think it, as I mentioned, when you're building a facility that is a you know, advanced manufacturing in a technology that the U.S. doesn't have, it's, to me, it kind of makes sense that they would send their people to oversee some of the the cutting edge stuff that needs to be done. But I think as you, you know, if you look at the Hyundai and Kia plants that are in Georgia and Alabama, I think you'll find that once the plants are up and running and they, you know, they, the goal is to hire local American citizens. And the reason is because it's cheaper. It's less expensive.
Tammy Overby formerly led the U.S. Korea Business Council at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Tammy, for your time.
My pleasure.
In Florida, jury selection begins today in the trial of the man charged with attempting to assassinate Donald Trump last year when he was running for president.
A Secret Service agent says he spotted Ryan Ruth holding a rifle and fired on the suspect while Trump was golfing at his West Palm Beach club last September. Ruth will represent himself in court. The judge hearing the case granted Ruth's request to dismiss his lawyers.
NPR's Greg Allen will be in the courtroom today. He joins us from Fort Pierce, Florida. So, Greg, why did Ruth decide he wanted to represent himself?
Well, you know, we had a series of pretrial hearings over the last several months, and in the last several, Ruth told Judge Eileen Cannon he was dissatisfied with his attorneys. Because he couldn't hire his own lawyers, he was assigned two federal public defenders. But over the course of several months, he'd said, told the judge he didn't like how they were representing him. In a letter to the judge, he said they were a million miles apart, that's a quote, and were refusing to answer his questions. Judge Eileen Cannon, who's hearing the case, held a couple of hearings and considered an evaluation of Ruth's competency that was done by a forensic psychologist. She agreed Ruth could represent himself, but denied a request from his public defenders that they be released from the trial. Instead, she says they'll serve as standby counsel, helping him with court filings and other legal assistance when needed.
Okay, so remind us, what is Ruth charged with and what penalties could he face?
Right. Well, you know, to recap, in September of last year, a Secret Service agent who was part of Trump's security detail says he saw a gun barrel poking from the tree line a few holes ahead of where the then presidential candidate was golfing. He immediately fired on the person holding the gun. A man later identified as Ruth fled the scene and was arrested a short time later driving north on Interstate 95. The main count he faces is attempted assassination of a major presidential candidate. A conviction on that charge would carry a maximum penalty of life in prison. There are four other counts, including some federal weapons charges, and Ruth has pleaded not guilty to all the charges.
All right, tell us about Ryan Ruth and tell us about how he'll conduct his defense.
Well, you know, he spent most of his life in North Carolina before moving to Hawaii. He has a criminal record, including a conviction in 2002 for possessing an explosive device. He's apparently held a lot of different political views in his time, supporting people like Bernie Sanders, Tulsi Gabbard, and then Donald Trump. He's been a strong supporter of Ukraine. He traveled there and was photographed and interviewed while there. He said he supported Trump for president in 2016 and now regrets that decision. A key piece of evidence in the trial, I think, will be this 12-page letter he left with a friend that was turned over to authorities after his arrest. Prosecutors plan to show just the first page of the letter to the jury. That's where he writes, "Dear world, this is an assassination attempt on Donald Trump, but I failed you." Ruth wants the jury to see the full text of the 12-page letter. He said in a motion to the judge that, quote, "every line is about gentleness, peacefulness, and nonviolent caring for humanity." Judge Cannon says she'll wait until later to rule on that request.
And speaking of Judge Cannon, she had another high-profile case not that long ago. That was Donald Trump's criminal trial on charges that he mishandled classified and top-secret documents.
Right. We heard a lot about Judge Eileen Cannon over the last couple years. She was appointed to the federal bench by Trump in 2020. In that classified documents case, she dismissed the charges against Trump, ruling that the appointment of a special counsel to prosecute the former president was unconstitutional. She was randomly assigned to hear this case.
All right. That's NPR's Greg Allen in Fort Pierce, Florida. Greg, thanks.
You're welcome.
This is NPR News.
Good morning. It is 7:19. Thank you for listening to the Monday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr. Malachi Coons joins me now.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah.
Feeling rested after yesterday? But, of course, big weekend for us.
Big weekend.
Taking it easy this morning.
Yeah, feet are still a little sore. Otherwise, I'm doing pretty good.
Nice. Yeah, how'd you spend your Sunday?
Little bit of everything. Little relaxing, little grocery shopping. Last night, I went to Carolyn King's house, our good friend and volunteer. It was the Miss America pageant last night.
Oh, which you had done a piece on?
We had interviewed Emma Vries, Miss Minnesota, so we needed to see how she was doing.
And how did it go?
She did not make the top 11. They narrow it down fairly soon to the top 11, and she did not make that cut. So we were disappointed about that. And then I stayed for a bit and watched the 11 gals do their talent portion. But before the pageant started, Carolyn, she subscribes to this like pageant channel. So she had the preliminary events that we could watch. So I did get to see, I got to see Emma's preliminary talent. I got to see some interview stuff with her. So it was exciting to see. And then, you know, they did bring everybody out at various times. So then we were like, oh, there's Emma.
Nice. Well, I'm guessing everybody wants to know what state took it home?
Miss New York.
Oh. Okay.
Yep.
Talented? And,
if I'm remembering her talent correctly, she was not one of my favorites.
Oh, okay.
But there's a lot.
Coastal elites.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. And she looks like a very accomplished young woman who has done a lot. Carolyn sent me her bio this morning, so I didn't get a great chance to look at it, but it looks like she's done a lot of good work in her field, so... Yeah, and our Miss Minnesota, Emma Vries from the Osage area, she does get to keep representing Minnesota throughout the year, so she'll be, you know, making various stops and doing her good work. She's promoting water safety. She'll still be working on that. So, it was fun.
Yeah, folks can find that original piece with Emma at KEXC.org.
Yes.
Okay. Support for KEXC comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org.
It is time for events up north. We're going to take a closer look at some of the events happening across northern Minnesota this week.
The Friends of the Brainerd Public Library welcome author Carrie J. Griffith today at noon. He will discuss his book, Rattlesnake Bluff, A Sam Rivers Mystery. You may bring your own lunch or enjoy the light refreshments provided.
And the Pine River Bacchus Community Garden celebrates its 15th season with an open house and community meal today from 3:30 to 6 with live music, games for kids, and prize drawings located just west of the football field at Pine River Bacchus School.
Stages of the Range players are holding auditions for the ice fishing play today and tomorrow from 4:30 to 6:30 at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Virginia. The play was written by Minnesota storyteller Kevin Kling, and performance dates are in November.
Kootaska Community Action hosts a Big View conversation tomorrow from 11 to 1 at Community Presbyterian Church in Grand Rapids. This month, learn more about First Call for Help, whose mission is to provide crisis intervention and referral services. Pre-registration is required for that. You can email alicem@kootaska.org.
On Wednesday, Northern Exposure to Lifelong Learning presents a program on New Zealand travel. It is at 9:30 at the Bagley Public Library. Doors open at 9. That's fun. And our very own DJ Dang and Eileen went to New Zealand a couple years ago. I've always wanted to go to New Zealand.
Yeah, it seems interesting. This is about two local women who did travel there, and they're going to tell you all about it. And
that makes sense. I don't know why they'd be saying, here's how you can travel to, but maybe it's that still. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that a little bit, you know, I'm sure there's lots of pertinent information shared in that event. And the Mesaba Concert Association kicks off their season on Thursday, 7 o'clock at Hibbing High School Auditorium with Young Original. It's a fusion of jazz, classical, folk, and pop.
And then Mixed Precipitation Opera and Theater Group presents Pickup Truck Opera Volume 5, Saturday, September 13th at 3 p.m. at the Mask and Rose Theater in Pulpaski.
And coming up on Thursday morning at, I believe, 8:45, we're going to talk with the folks behind Mixed Precipitation and Kate Bellevue from Mask and Rose Theater. We're going to learn a lot more about that event. And Events Up North is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. If you have events to share with our listeners, you can email psa@kaxc.org and look for Events Up North at kaxc.org every week.
I do also want to plug this Wednesday, there's a Minnesota Department of Transportation has an open house at 5:30 at the Grand Rapids, at the Yanmar Arena for the Grand Rapids La Prairie Corridor Study. There'll be a presentation, opportunity for questions and feedback. And I'm very biased because I use that area a lot and I bike across it a lot and walk across it a lot. So if you have opportunities for suggestions or questions, it's a great place to go out and share kind of what can be done with our downtown corridor. So that is this Wednesday, 5:30 at Yanmar Arena.
All right. Yes. Thank you for that. It's the Monday Morning Show here on KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Malachi Coons. Did we talk about, Riverfest. Did we talked off air, I know.
Off air, yes. Yeah, some highlights. Yeah, some experiences. Yeah. Man, what a day. Yeah, like you said, feet are still a little tired, but hearts full. So many good performances, so many little moments. I was trying to think about some of my favorite, you know, like Courtney played all the hits.
Yeah.
She played everything.
It was really good. And I got to see her sound check on Saturday morning.
Where she also played six full songs,
I think.
Yeah. That was
awesome. One of my favorite moments is I was on the back of a golf cart bringing some stuff back to the station while she was playing, and Charlie Mitchell was driving me, and I'm just hanging off the back and I'm singing along to History Eraser.
Oh, History Eraser is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. Margo played, a really good chunk of that brand new album. That was her album of the week last year. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, Hurting on the Bottle and Going Through the Classics as well.
She's been covering Bob Dylan's Maggie's Farm.
Yes, I heard a lot of people were talking about her guitar player, especially during Maggie's Farm. He had these like fun, really electric country guitar lines that he just kept coming up with new ones every single time, and it was a lot of fun. And then the Rainbow.
Yeah. Was that Logan Ledger with Margo Price?
Logan Ledger was on Margo Price's left, and he sang a lot and played acoustic, but he was not that guitarist. No.
Okay.
But when he started singing during Maggie's Farm, I think he sounded a lot like Bob Dylan.
Mm.
And you could tell he was laughing about it. He was like trying to close his nose a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the right way to say that, but
get a little nasally.
Yeah. You know, we love Bob Dylan and we love the nasally, but you could see he and Margo were kind of laughing. And I think that's what it was about, because he was trying to do like a country Bob Dylan thing. And I thought he sounded like him. I did actually think. I wonder if there's video out there of that performance.
Yeah. That was a good one.
But a beautiful day. Were you there? Text in. Let us know. It was some of your favorite moments, favorite songs, favorite things you heard. We would love to hear from you. Text in 218-326-1234.
Right now, we're going to hear from our album of the week. It's Monday morning, so we get to kick it off. It is called Arrivals and Departures, Adventures of Captain Kurt by Curtis Harding.
Yeah, it's kind of like a spacey soul album. He said he was very into Ridley Scott.
Mm.
And then he shouted out a sci-fi director in the intro, and it is very much like, if you listen to it especially as a whole, it's kind of following this character who's kind of traveling through space and time to get back home to his loved ones. Nothing too like cosmic in it, but broadly that was the idea for it, and I think related to being a touring musician and being gone all the time and trying to figure your way out through these things. So
yeah, good. Well, we're going to hear the final track on the album, which is called Running Out of Space. And you can let us know what you think. Text us 218-326-1234. It's Curtis Harding. We'll be right back. from our album of the week. That is Curtis Harding. The song was called Running Out of Space, and the album is called Departures and Arrivals, Adventures of Captain Kurt.
Yep, you heard it here on the Monday Morning Show. That's Jennifer Barr. I'm Malachi Coons. Later on, we'll get a little more info on that album at KAXC.org. I'll probably get to that tomorrow with it being a busy week and taking off a little early today. But can always look for more on the album of the week and past ones on our website.
KAXC.org. And support for this program comes from Sanford Health with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
Support also comes from the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork, presenting the Militici, new music from the old country. Sam Miltich and his friends will take the stage on Saturday, September 13th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at the door. Info at edgecenterarts.org.
We also thank Headwaters Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Bemidji. Huff's congregation strives to build bridges with the community and welcomes all to seek truth, practice love, and celebrate life. Learn more at headwatersuu.org.
It is time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. We will start with yesterday, September 7th.
We wish a happy 62nd anniversary to Lynn and Jack Nackbar from Big Fork. And also happy 23rd anniversary to Ethan and Xiaoyan Montgomery from Bemidji.
Happy 33rd birthday to Benjamin Hermerding from Brainerd.
And Dave Hagman, happy 73rd to you from Grand Rapids. Saw you at Riverfest.
And Mike Degnan, turning 63 yesterday from Side Lake. Happy birthday.
And today is September 8th already. Happy 35th anniversary to Sherry and Jeff Lesarge from Grand Rapids.
Happy 41st anniversary today, Brian and Judy Smith from York, UK, and Big Fork.
And Jan Sandberg, happy 79th to you from Minneapolis and sometimes Grand Rapids.
And happy 46th birthday to Eric Dory of Grand Rapids.
Best wishes.
York and Big Fork.
Yep.
Two places to live.
Yeah. Our best wishes to you all. If you have birthday or anniversary greetings to share, you can text in 218-326-1234.
So our question of the week, what TV shows have you been into lately? They can be new or old. Jennifer, I know you've probably got something for us.
Yep, I am really excited. Actually, tomorrow night, the fifth season of Only Murders in the Building.
Okay.
Returns, so I'm looking forward to that one.
I believe also, I'm caught up on that.
Yeah, the new season of Jeopardy begins tonight. So excited for that because they took a summer hiatus.
I think I was 29 years old when I learned that Jeopardy takes breaks and it has season opens.
It's going to be season
42. Has it always been that way?
Season 42.
I thought it was just always happening all the time.
As far as I know, they take, it's only like 6 weeks. They go all the way till like the end of July and then they take a break.
But okay. Good to know.
It's like my nightly ritual and I've been missing it because I don't want to watch reruns. So.
They do reruns because you've seen it before?
Yeah.
Is it like the university ones where they bring back the kids from college competitions or something?
I don't even know if they have the college tournament anymore. Maybe, yes, they do. But I haven't seen like a teen or kids tournament for a long time.
Yep.
Yeah.
So could be time for that. Okay.
Yeah. Also, we heard from our coworker, Heather Johnson, and she has been watching The Paper, which is a new Greg Daniels, who created the American version of The Office.
It's the one that looks a lot like The Office.
Yes. So it's like the premise is it's like the same documentary crew that covered The Office is now covering a newspaper in Indiana. And the only character that is the same from The Office is Oscar Martinez, happens to have moved to this newspaper, and he's very annoyed that this documentary crew is following him.
Okay, so it's almost like it's like a continuation, or like there will be a lot of similarities.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, he said, and Weasley's in it.
Is that
the red-haired guy? I think he's a Weasley.
Yeah, Domhnall Gleeson.
Yeah, I don't know his name.
His dad was like a famous British actor.
Famous British actor. And yeah. There's a lot of Harry Potter actors, I feel like, that I'll see from time to time in like a random British movie. And I think, they must be more bigger in Britain.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like Filch. No? Robin.
Oh, from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like he's in a lot of movies, but you don't actually. Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting off track here. But yeah, I think that the main guy is Fred or George.
Fred and George Weasley are the twin brothers of Ron.
Yep. They are.
Weasley, you're incorrect. Oh, but the main guy, yes, yeah, is one of those two.
I believe the main guy from the show. Anyways, okay. I think that'll be interesting. It looked funny. I think I saw a preview for it or something.
It's on Peacock, and it's one of those, like, do I want to add another streaming service?
Just ridiculous these days. You can't even...
Like, you do them for a month, and then, like, you try to cancel. I mean, it's just, like, it's an awful system we've gotten ourselves into, I would say.
Yeah, I know. It's such a problem. It's like, I almost need another... I need an additional app that is just constantly creating new emails, signing me up for new one-month trials, and canceling them. But it's, like, it's always telling me what my info is so I can keep logging in.
Oh, yeah.
Someone should invent that.
Yes. Also, I need an app that tells you what is streaming where. Because you hear it, like, shows and movies, and it's like...
How does that not exist yet?
Yeah, I think there might be something.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know what it is.
It's, need to go back to regular TV.
I know.
Streaming was briefly better, and it's worse now. So that's my opinion. You can't find anything. Just like, there's one moment where everything was on Netflix, life was golden, now it sucks.
Yeah. When Netflix was DVDs, like, you could get... anything.
I know.
Like, really
good
obscure
times.
Stuff, and they had, yeah, anything.
Yeah, I'm a serial moocher of other people's streaming services.
Yeah, that can work.
Family members, other people. Anyone I can get.
Yeah, if they let you. I know my parents were trying that for a bit, and then it all of a sudden it was like, I went to try to watch Netflix, and it was like, someone else is using this. And
I know.
Like, oh.
They just don't want to not... They don't want anyone to be happy, and they want to make as much money as possible. Fine.
Yeah.
What have I, but...
yeah, what about you?
Yeah, and folks can text in 218-326-1234. I have yet to watch the new season of Wednesday, but I think I will sometime shortly.
Okay.
I know it just came out.
Yeah,
I believe.
A little bit ago. Yeah. I watched the first season too, but hearing mixed reviews for the second season.
Okay, hearing mixed reviews. Well, I'm going to find out for myself.
Yep, yep.
But respect the reviewers nonetheless. And I also just wrapped up Sex Ed on Netflix, which I thought was a really good show.
Okay.
Really entertaining. Yeah. Good soundtrack, a lot of different British music, and kind of an interesting premise, I thought. And I was very entertained, so...
That is one of my favorite things about newer TV shows is, like, you hear this really good music.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like...
I should say them all the time.
It's artists that we've played, like Samantha Crane was in an episode of Reservation Dogs.
Yes.
Which is a very good show if you haven't checked that
totally.
Out.
Charlie Parr is snuck into an episode, too.
Oh, yeah, he did, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's always fun. Or you do discover, like, these songs. You're like, what is that? So that's one of my favorite thing about these newer TV shows.
Yeah, I usually have my... phone near me and I'll be Shazamming things, or there are good websites that kind of give you the whole soundtrack of different TV shows as well, but
yeah,
I'm always sometimes they pop onto Headwaters if I find a song and then I want to play it on KAXE, so that definitely happens a lot. But let us know, what are you into, old or new? Text in 218-326-1234.
It is time for our daily dose of phenology. It's the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. Here is John Latimer.
On today's date, September 8th, 1998, I admire the bluebirds sitting on the power lines. Bluebirds are always an exciting bird to see in the springtime. They have a lovely song. They come back to their homes, the nest boxes that we've put out. They check out the boxes. They squabble over who's going to settle where. They won't allow other bluebirds to live right next door, but they'll put up with the tree swallows so they can share these boxes. The bluebirds, once they've hatched their family, sort of disappear from the area. I don't see them very often during the later part of the summer. Oh, here and there, I might spot one or two. But this time of year, the bluebirds begin to congregate on the power lines. If they are a family group, they certainly don't display it on the power lines because they never sit next to one another. There's always, there may be on one may be on an upper line, one may be on a lower line, slightly removed. If they're on the same line, they'll be 5, 10, 15, 20 feet apart. They just keep to themselves, but they still present a beautiful blue and orange backdrop to the colors that are starting to intensify.
That is our daily phenology. Tune in tomorrow morning around 7:20 for John Latimer's latest observations. And hopefully we'll be hearing some student phenology reports starting at 6:45. Kids were back in school last week, and I know sometimes it takes a little bit, you know, a new school year. There's a lot to get settled, but I expect we'll hear from at least a few classrooms tomorrow.
Okay, for them to get in. I'm also excited to get a little weather update, as I know we've had a few frost advisories, I think, over the last week or so, but mm-hmm. I don't know if it actually... I guess I haven't yet heard of if it frosted anywhere, but I know like at my house, tomatoes not close to ready. So I think a little weather seems like it's going to be a little warmer. You know, yesterday was already warmer. Today is warmer. So looking forward to hearing how much more time the tomatoes have got outside.
Yeah, I think we're going to be okay here. Tonight we're like 55 to 60. So
nice.
Although last night, I mean, this morning, it was 37 when I first came in Hibbing, but it was like almost 50 already in Brainerd. So that was a big range of temperatures. But looks like, yeah, this week we're going to be into the 70s and our lows nowhere near freezing this week. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So lots more time. Right, right now, looking around the area, looking like kind of fair skies, hanging out in the mid 40s across the region.
It is time for What We're Reading. It's our show all about books, produced by our staff librarian, Tammy Bobrowski. Today, a conversation with Minnesota writer Tasha Coryell. Tasha's new thriller is called Matchmaking for Psychopaths. Tasha talks about how to avoid spoilers when describing the book to readers, her love of reality TV, and how she balances darkness with humor.
After Lexi's fiancé leaves her for her best friend on Lexi's birthday, she throws herself into her work. She's a matchmaker for psychopaths. Strange new clients try to worm their way into her private life, and then a human heart appears on Lexi's doorstep, just as her ex mysteriously disappears. And that's just the beginning of the twists, turns, and thrills you'll find in Tasha Coryell's new book, Matchmaking for Psychopaths. Here's our What We're Reading conversation. There are discoveries about your main character, Lexi, that come out as you get into the book. And I found that just very exciting to learn about and discover as I was reading it. So I kind of want to give readers that same opportunity to discover those on their own. So how have you been describing your book while making sure that you're not giving away some of these great spoilers?
That's a great question that I don't think I've been asked before. It's so hard. Like, I think that's one of the challenging things about writing a thriller is that people are like, oh, what's your book about? And you're like, well, it's about a matchmaker and like her fiance breaks up with her for her best friend. But then all these like weird things start happening. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how much I want to reveal. Because like some of the reveals I think would like get people to want to read the book more. But I also don't want to spoil it for them. Like right. I want them to discover it too. So I think a lot of the times I just focus on like the very basic premise of a matchmaker with like the promise of like, you know, some people dying and some body parts showing up. And I try not to delve too deep into what the other surprises are, because I know that like that's part of the reason why thriller readers are reading what they are, right? Because you want things to surprise you and you want to be kept guessing and make guesses yourself. And that's the joy of reading. So it is this really tricky balance. And I know that that's been a struggle for like book covers too, where they have to like put a synopsis. It's like, well, how much do you put in the synopsis? And I've noticed that in different editions of the book, sometimes things will change just because I think they're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't include this or we should include this.
Are you a fan of thrillers? Has that been a genre that you really enjoy?
Yes, I love the thriller genre. At first, it was a big guilty pleasure for me. And I a lot of people are like, oh, I don't have guilty pleasures. Like, I just like to let myself, you know, like whatever I like. But I was in grad school doing an MFA in creative writing when I first got really into thrillers. And I found myself gravitating towards thrillers when I wanted to read something I really enjoyed. So I had my reading for school, which is like very literary fiction. And then it would be like nighttime and I'd want to unwind. And I was like, well, I really just want to pick up a thriller. And it took me a while to lean into that and just sort of acknowledge that this is who I am as a person. And it took me a while to figure out that I was a thriller writer myself. So a lot of the novels that I wrote, because I've written more novels than I've published. A lot of the novels that I wrote, I think, were classified or could be classified as thrillers. And I didn't even know that they were thrillers. Like, it took me a long time to reach that identity.
You kind of bring up an interesting point as far as like writing, being a writer, getting into writing. There's a lot of writing advice I think I've heard in the past, like things like write from your own experiences, write what you know. And I'm not trying to incriminate you in any way, but like when you have a dark thriller, you know, how does one go about writing very dark characters and very dark things, you know, assuming that you're not actually drawing from your own experience, but how does that kind of come to fruition?
When I was younger, so I decided I wanted to become a writer when I was 8. This is a very long journey for me. And so especially during my teenage years, when I had like a lot of teenagers, I had a lot of angst. And some of that was just on the basis of being a teenager and other things. Like, I had very real serious things going on in my life. And one of the ways that I dealt with it was by writing a lot of memoir and very sad poems. And then I, as I got older, sort of shifted out of that into writing mostly fiction. And now I pretty much only write fiction with like the occasional essay. But it's almost like I needed to get the memoir out of my system. Like, it was like, I just needed to write about my life. And I think that transitioning into writing fiction that was like very fictional was a pivotal moment for me, because I think it helped me write things that were like more interesting to other people and think about how to make each piece the best that I could versus thinking about how I make it true or real to life. So I would say that my books are very fictional. But I do take some components from my real life, especially like small little things. I was talking to a couple of friends over the weekend, and one of my friends was like, yeah, every time I'm reading your books, I see something and I'm like, oh, could this be about me? And, you know, I acknowledged to her. So in my first book, Love Letters to a Serial Killer, the character works at a nonprofit. And the two people I was talking to both worked for nonprofits for a long time. And I was like, well, I did legitimately draw from both of your lives when I was thinking about this nonprofit work. And they were like, oh yeah, we recognized ourselves in that. So I take snippets from like my life, but also other people's lives. So like in Matchmaking for Psychopaths, the main character has a very tenuous relationship with her mother, which I also have. My mother's very different from the mother of the book, which if you read the book, you'll understand why. But I was able to draw on like, okay, what is it like, you know, having this really difficult relationship, and how does that impact your other relationships in the world? So I take small things, and then even just like silly things, like all of the characters in the book really like to watch reality television, and I like a lot of reality television. And so I was able to include like my thoughts on that and my experiences with that.
This is What We're Reading on KAXE, and we're talking with Minnesota writer Tasha Coriel. Her new thriller is Matchmaking for Psychopaths.
Let's get into the character a little more. Lexi is your main character. She is the matchmaker. And like you just said, she's a big fan of reality TV. So I was going to ask you about that. What does that say about her? And then, you know, what about reality TV that you love did you pull into that book and pull into that character?
So one of the themes that I was thinking about as I was writing this book is loneliness. There are a lot of conversations, I think, right now about like a loneliness crisis, or like people are hanging out with one another less than they used to. I saw an article the other day that was like, oh, people don't throw parties anymore. And I think that I've experienced some of this myself too, especially like I'm a parent to a toddler. It's really difficult to make plans with like adult friends because like I don't really leave the house at night. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, are you free this weekend? And I'm like, yeah, how's 10 a.m.? And they're like, 10 a.m. And so it becomes really difficult. But I still long for connection. And I think in some ways, reality television sort of fills that void, because the people on reality television can start to feel like friends, especially like if there's someone I really like in reality television, I'll look them up on Instagram, and I like follow a bunch of people from reality television on Instagram. And it makes me feel this intimacy with them that you don't necessarily feel when you're watching like a scripted show.
Your previous books include Hungry People. That's a collection of darkly funny stories. You mentioned Love Letters to a Serial Killer, a crime humor suspense novel. And now you've got Matchmaking for Psychopaths. There's a lot of crime and suspense novels published every year. That's a very big genre. But yours seem to have this added dash of darkness and humor. What informs that combination for you?
I have a really hard time consuming cultural products that are entirely serious. I think because there are a lot of serious things going on every day, it becomes really overwhelming. And I think a lot of times humor gets written off as something that is not intelligent or not important. But I think that humor makes consuming difficult topics more palatable. Like, I can read about very dark and difficult things as long as it's also funny. And I feel that way about writing, too. Like, I want to address serious issues and serious topics within my writing. And, you know, I think especially if you're writing a thriller that has elements of, like, death and crime, you need to like, think seriously about what you're saying. But I need the humor, like, takes the edge off. The humor allows you to actually consume it. And that's what I enjoy in the things that I like to watch or read, is I need some sort of humorous element. But, you know, I like the death and the mystery part too. It's important to me to combine all those elements. I also am just a person who, like, the more serious the situation is, the more jokes I crack. Like, it's just my method of coping, where it's like, okay, we're in this really difficult time to start firing off jokes. And I know that it's a coping mechanism, but it's how I express myself.
Tasha Coriel's new thriller is Matchmaking for Psychopaths. It's What We're Reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski.
What We're Reading is made possible in part by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. You can let us know what you've been reading at our What We're Reading Facebook page, or text us 218-326-1234.
Support for KEXE comes from Itasca County Health and Human Services, hosting the 17th annual Community Connect on Thursday, September 18th from 11 to 3 at Yanmar Arena in Grand Rapids. Featuring over 50 social service agencies providing info on housing, energy, county assistance, and more. All are welcome.
We also thank the First State Bank of Big Fork, with branches in Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com, member FDIC.
This is the Monday Morning Show. That's Jennifer Barr. I'm Malachi Coons. Coming up at 8:10, we are going to be chatting with Sarah Kroymans about healthy aging. September is Healthy Aging Month. She is from the University of Minnesota Extension, an educator, and she'll be talking more about different well-being practices and a variety of things that are related to the Healthy Aging Month. So that's coming up at 8:10.
And 9 o'clock, it's Headwaters with Andrew DeZingle. He'll have some great music for you and a slice of green cheese and the request line.
All on the way. Do we know what the request line is?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Well, if we hear it, we will pass that on. David Johns hosting On the River today from 1 to 4.
Support for KAXE comes from Hibbing Chrysler Center, serving the Northland for over 25 years on the Beltline in Hibbing. Their service center provides regular maintenance and major auto repairs weekdays from 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. More details online at hibbingchrysler.us.
And we receive support from Grand Rapids State Bank, committed to serving the Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And you are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio. We are telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. You can find us at KAXE.org or ask your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you for your support.
Coming up this Thursday, Rachel Kilgore is going to be performing at Co House in Grand Rapids at 7:30. She is a Duluth folk musician doing a little tour around northern Minnesota throughout this month. And that show is on the way Thursday. And G.B. Layton on Friday will be at the Minor Family Pavilion in Grand Rapids behind the arena, 7 o'clock. That is a show hosted by the Rife Center.
Taking a look at our current temperatures, 39 in Hibbing, 47 in Bemidji, 52 in Brainerd, 50 in Park Rapids, 44 in Grand Rapids.
Increase in clouds throughout the day, chance of showers by late afternoon. We do have highs in the upper 60s, low 70s. Tonight, showers likely, lows in the upper 50s. Patchy fog after midnight. Tomorrow, slight chance of showers.